On Saturday, I was in Tempe, Arizona for a graduate student conference called the Posthuman Network. I had a chance to chat with Dr. Daniel Gilfillan about art and non-human agency in parrots.
My first book publication was on sort of a cultural history of experimentation with the radio medium, the role of radio art or sound art, and a number of the people whose work I explore are sound artists and what they're trying to do with sound as a perceptual modality, but also as a medium that carries communication along with it. I am currently working on a book on sound in the Anthropocene, trying to get at a way to maybe a different vector for thinking about this quote-unquote new period of geological time. Within the realm of the humanities, the term has taken on somewhat of a life of its own, thinking metaphorically, that brings together questions surrounding environmental studies, sustainability, what is being called the environmental humanities, and helping us to think a bit differently about our meaning humans, position within sort of the world, as whether or not we can be the central agents for change, or whether we need to expand that idea of agency to include other types of agents that we often take for granted as being sort of support people for the humans. So we can think of animals and plants as sort of logical extensions from a notion of human agency to non-human agency. But I also think we need to think about geologies, rock formations, atmospheres, because all of these things affect acoustics in various ways. For me, there's a big conceit to this idea of the Anthropocene, that we locate ourselves in the exact center of the definition, where the cause is, but in many respects, people think that we'll be the sole engineers of the solutions for the Anthropocene. And the sound artists that I'm looking at are trying to problematize that a little bit. A group of sound artists who work together, they're independent sound artists, but they have a collaborative group called Alien Productions. They're based in Vienna. And they began a project in 2012 called Meta Music, in which I don't know how they got on this idea, but how do you resolve the issue of boredom in zoo animals? And can sound provide a way to engage animals who are in captivity in ways that we might not have thought about before? So can zoologists, zookeepers, bring sound into play into that activity that they provide to the animals that are there? And they began some initial testing of use of musical instruments with animals and thinking about animal musicality. And they were approached by an animal biologist who works with a group of rescued African gray parrots. There's a society for rescued African gray parrots outside of Vienna, and they bring with them a large set of needs. They need a lot of space. They need a lot of attention. They need a lot of interaction, human or otherwise. Ideally, they have a partner bird. They don't like to be alone. They're very social animals. And so a lot of people either give them up to these shelters because they didn't realize how much work they were. They're too loud, too noisy. They keep waking me up, those kinds of things. Or this shelter also rescues parrots that have been abused and rehabilitates them. The artists decided to see if they could work with the African grays. Irene Pepperberg is an animal cognition specialist and has worked with African gray parrots. One in particular who she worked with for a couple of decades. And her work shows that as they develop, they can have the cognition ability of a 4-year-old child. They also outlive the human species. They have a longer lifespan than most humans. And so they felt that they might be the right animal group to work with musical instruments. So they began adapting children's musical instruments like Fisher-Price keyboards and electric guitars to see if these birds would interact with them. they receive some interaction. They also use triggering. They have sound trigger devices, so any kind of connection between the bird and the instrument gets picked up, and then they use an algorithm to turn that into sound, and then they would compose with it. But as the project developed, they caught the interest of the School for Interface Design at the University of Arts and Design in Linz, and that group received a 3-year Austrian Science Foundation grant to examine how they might produce instruments that are more parrot-centric and less human-centric, so moving away from this idea of an adapted child's instrument and looking more at the biosemiotic patterns of the birds themselves and what they'd like to interact with in their sort of native or shelter environment, the types of things that they do with their beaks, with their claws, and adapting along those lines. And so the instruments are moving more into the kinds of things that evoke the parrot's curiosity versus the kinds of things that evoke humans' curiosity. And as I've been sort of observing this project over the last couple of years, I've noticed that this is this idea of curiosity that is the thing that connects the parrots and the humans. And they had a 3-month long museum installation with 21 parrots, primarily African greys. There are a couple of Amazon parrots in there too. And over that 3-month period, so they built a very large aviary space on the roof of the museum in Linz, and the birds lived outdoors, had some shelter if it was too cold. They were visited daily by the populace of Linz, and so while I was there just for a week, and what I noticed was that there's a lot of moments of play that occurs between the encounter between humans and parrots, a lot of mimicry on the part of the humans, less so on the part of the parrots. That idea of play and mutual curiosity, I think, is that, for me, is that bridge between the performance of agency, in a way. And sound helps bring that about. Back in March of 2004, the European Space Agency launched a space probe to travel to the to Jupiter. Their mission was to soft land a spacecraft onto one of the orbiting comets of Jupiter. And in August of 2014, as they were approaching the comet, they picked up a whole range of low frequency electromagnetic waves. And upon transposing it so that they were audible for human reception, discovered that it was actually producing a song of sorts. And just that's an example for a lot of people to kind of contemplate what is inaudible to our species, and that what exists in the realm of the inaudible, we don't lend any weight to. Unless we are scientists or are capable of transposing those waves, or artists who do that quite often as well. And it kind of puts into stark relief some of the larger questions around, well, if we don't hear it, it doesn't exist, right? Or if we don't see it, then it has no impact on what my life is like, right?
It's interesting to think of sound as a space that we share with each other and with other kinds of creatures. Mm-hmm. What are some ways that we should be listening to our non-human neighbors?
I think in the for example with these parrots, it's about slowing down. It's about using the technology to bring us into the space of curiosity, and then maybe not connecting only through the technology, but through that idea of play.
That was Professor Dan Giffelin talking about sound, art, and parrots. To learn more about Alien Productions' Metamusic project, visit metamusic.at.